This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're 6 days away from a high-stakes election in which control of the House and Senate are at stake. With new voting machines and new procedures in many places, some people are preparing for a meltdown in the voting process, while others are predicting only minor problems. My guest, Dan Seligson, is expecting something in between. Seligson is the editor of electionline.org, a nonpartisan and non-advocacy organization that tracks and analyzes election reform issues. They've published an election preview examining potential election day problems. I asked Seligson what problems he's expecting.
Well, I think we've got so many people who are going to be voting on voting machines for the first time that they haven't used before. We've got poll workers who may have used these machines and administered an election in the primary with a lot fewer people to deal with. The stakes are higher, the participation is going to be much greater, and the possibility of some kind of breakdown somewhere in the system when you have just this many new machines, this many new rules around the country, the probability is good that we're going to have problems.
Things were supposed to be better by now. We've had the experiences of 2000 and 2004. The Help America Vote Act has taken effect. So why are we having such problems when things were supposed to have improved by now?
Well, January 1st, 2006 was a big date in the Help America Vote Act. That was the date at which each state was supposed to have a statewide voter registration database completed. And that was a major endeavor. That took all of the local lists had to be combined into this state list that had to be interactive, real-time, et cetera, et cetera. This was a complicated undertaking. And then, in time for the first primary this year, states had to have new voting machines, or most states had to have new voting machines that were accessible to people with disabilities. Most of the time, that would be a touchscreen machine like we see in Maryland. In some cases, it's called a hybrid machine, where you use sort of a touchscreen interface, and it prints out a paper ballot that's then scanned by this optical scanner. But each state had to have these things in place in time for this year. So what we've seen is a tremendous amount of change, a lot of voting machine purchases, a lot of new database troubles in some places where they're just kind of having growing pains. They haven't done anything of this scale before in elections. And then we have some new procedures around the country, voter ID, provisional voting, that kind of thing. So we have all these things combined this year in a high-stakes race. Things that we really didn't have in 2004, while we had a huge election, we had a great turnout, we had a very high-stakes election, we didn't have the level of change between 2000 and 2004 that we've had really between 2004 and this year.
One of the issues with electronic voting machines is there a way of accurately doing a recount? And that's why a lot of people insist that there should be voter-verified paper audit trails. What are those?
A voter-verified paper audit trail is essentially a slip of thermal paper that runs either to the right of or on top of a voting machine, an electronic voting machine. And it essentially shows the voter exactly what should be in the computer's memory. So once the two match up, when the voter sees that what's on the screen matches what's on the slip of paper, they finalize the ballot, they hit the cast vote button, and then that slip of paper is cut off, kept separately, and then the electronic vote is, of course, kept in the computer's memory. Now, after the election, in most states that require these paper trails, the paper is used in the event of a recount. We saw this in Ohio, where they audited results after the primary.
But in one county in Ohio, wasn't it found that 10% of these paper ballots were compromised or damaged or uncountable for some reason or another?
Yeah, see, there's the trouble. What happens is we had inexperienced poll workers load thermal paper in the wrong way. Now, if you've ever used a thermal fax machine, if you load thermal paper in the wrong way, you don't see anything. Then we had some that ripped. We had some that were inexplicably blank. So when they wanted to do an audit of these voter-verified paper audit trails after the election just to see how accurate they were and how they matched up with the machine totals, they found that 10% were uncounted. Now, flash forward to this election. Imagine we have a race that's decided by 100 votes. They need to recount using these voter-verified paper audit trails, and they lose 25,000 ballots.
Let me get to the Diebold voting machines. That's the brand that most people know because there's been so much controversy surrounding them, because the head of Diebold has been a Republican, has supported Republicans, and there's a lot of, well, why don't you describe what the concerns are around Diebold machines?
Well, the concerns started really before 2004, when computer scientists in California started to become concerned about how machines are certified, who's making them, whether the code that runs these machines has some kind of independent verification by computer scientists, whether the machines are hackable, that kind of thing. Diebold was steadfast in its defense of its machines, despite the criticism that was coming in from computer scientists and very reputable computer scientists. Then we had this incident in 2004 where Walden O'Dell, the former CEO of the company, wrote a letter to a fundraising letter where he said he was going to, quote, help deliver Ohio's electoral votes to President Bush. That's not a good idea for the head of a large a voting machine company to make a statement like that just before an election. And that while he's gone and the company has, you know, since enacted a policy that limits any political activity by people who work in its election division, that statement and people remember what Walden O'Dell said. They remember that every time they think of Diebold. And you know, I think that the company continues to be the focus when people say there's something wrong with electronic voting machines, that electronic voting machines are corrupt, that, you know, these companies are run by Republicans. This is because of what Walden O'Dell did in that letter.
Is there any evidence that the Diebold machines are any more or less prone to tampering, to hacking, than other brands?
I don't know if Diebold is more or less hackable than other brands. I do know that when experts in the field get a hold of a voting machine to see whether it's hackable, they seem to get Diebold machines more often than not. So we had this Princeton professor who came up to Capitol Hill, I think it was sometime in early October, and he essentially hacked into a voting machine at this hearing in about a minute. So it was a dramatic display of something that, you know, that could happen on election day. Now, Diebold officials would say no one would have enough access to this voting machine. Nobody would have, you know, the necessary time and the ability to do this. Plus, they use old software. It's an old machine. It can't happen in the real world. Well, I don't think that Diebold's defense has really moved many people at this point.
So you've painted a picture in which there are a lot of genuine concerns about how electronic voting machines are going to function and whether the final counts will be contested or not. Is there any system in place in any part of the country to really deal with the potential problems that may occur on Election Day this year?
Well, I think optical scan systems, which are going to be used in a lot of the country, really, I think that is the most prevalent form of voting. What it is it's a piece of paper where a voter either completes a line or circles a circle next to a candidate's name. These machines are paper, essentially. They're fed into these feeders at a polling place. If there's a stray mark or some other ballot-spoiling error on the ballot, it gets spit back out. The voter can get a new ballot and vote it correctly. After the election, you've got all your electronic total that came from the machine. And then if there's any dispute, you can hand count ballots. If a voter made some weird mark and it was rendered uncountable by the machine, if I put a big heart next to Kerry and a big X and sad face next to Bush, an election official could look at that and determine voter intent. Obviously, I meant to vote for Kerry. So these machines, I think, address a lot of the concerns. They're paper, that you can do an independent count. But what they don't do is allow people with disabilities the possibility of voting independently and secretly.
Now, there have been disputes over the registration process and, you know, who's eligible to vote. Have there been a lot of states that have been changing the process in the past couple of years?
Well, there have been some new requirements with registration as far as providing the last four digits of a Social Security number or a driver's license. But there have been also, in Arizona, for example, the Proposition 200 was approved by voters 2 years ago, and what it requires is that voters show proof of citizenship when they register. Now, this is something that no other state in the country requires. You check off a box, and it's essentially it's a legal document, so you're liable, you know, if you lie about your citizenship status. But Arizona takes that extra step to make people show something when they register. In other states, there have been issues with matching. The way that these new registration databases work is that you have information about a voter that can then be compared to health records, to corrections records, that kind of thing. So and driver's records. So there has been an issue about whether a perfect match needs to happen. In California, for example, they said that thousands of voters weren't achieving this perfect match, and that people were being knocked off the registration rolls unnecessarily or essentially disenfranchised because the information didn't match up like it was supposed to.
Now, in 2004, Ohio was very controversial. And it remains controversial in some circles. Congressman John Conyers had issued a report, What Went Wrong in Ohio, examining problems with long lines, cutting back on the right to provisional ballots, cutting back on the right of citizens to register to vote, targeting minority and urban voters for legal challenges, as well as other problems and irregularities. And the Secretary of State, who oversees and certifies the election, Kenneth Blackwell, was in 2004 co-chair of the Bush-Cheney campaign. And this year, he remains Secretary of State, but is also running for governor. So given the controversies surrounding what happened in 2004, what are we looking at now in Ohio this year?
Well, I think if Florida was the poster child for election dysfunction in 2000, I think Ohio has taken the tiara. Ohio is really the new ground zero for potential election problems, and I think the media will descend on that state. Poll watchers, organizations like Election Protection will be watching very closely. We'll be there as well to take a look at what's happening. There's a lot of things going on in Ohio. First of all, most of the state is using Diebold, I believe, TSX voting machines, which is a newer version of their touchscreen machine that's in Maryland. These machines have the paper trail. Again, we had problems with the recounting of paper trails in Cuyahoga County. We have the state's top election official, who is the arbiter of elections in the state, is now also a candidate. So he's sort of, I guess he would be considered then the man on trial as well as the judge. But that's not rare. That happens in a number of states. And then we have a lot of questions arising about what went wrong in 2004 and what's been done to fix it. I think there has been some effort to deal with this issue of machine allocation. There's been new formulas about how many voters are expected voters and how many machines you have to have per voter. One of the biggest problems in Ohio was that machines were allocated incorrectly. So there were huge lines, particularly in inner city precincts. And a number of voters just didn't have the time to stand there for 2 or 3 hours in the rain. I think it was a miserable day to stand there and wait to vote.
In the 2004 election, Ohio became known as the new Florida. Do you think in 2006 that another state will become known as the new Ohio? Are you expecting particular trouble in one state this time around?
Well, we selected 10 states to watch, the criteria being there was either something going on in election administration or the potential for difficulty. One of the states that I think is maybe being overlooked is Connecticut. Connecticut has three House races that are very competitive. I think that the Senate race between Ned Lamont and Joe Lieberman has become a lot less competitive in recent days. But the House races are very competitive. And potentially, if you've got three Republican incumbents who lose or get close to losing their seat, this could have a major impact on the election. The state is using lever machines. Lever machines are these old clunky metal unit that have been in place in a number of states for 60, 70, I don't know how many years, but a long time. There's 25 jurisdictions, and this is cities, small towns, who are going to be using optical scan machines. But for the most part, most Connecticut voters will cast ballots on these lever machines, which in 2005, we had a federal agency, the Election Assistance Commission, write a memo saying we're essentially not compliant with federal law anymore. So we've got vast numbers of people voting on these machines that a federal agency have said essentially are not compliant. They don't have a paper record.
You're also monitoring Florida. You've talked a little bit about potential problems in Florida this time around. Are there other things that you're looking for in Florida?
Well, Florida made a change to its voter ID law that, while it seems subtle, could have an impact on some voters. What they did was they previously in 2004, a voter needed to present a photo ID in order to cast a ballot. If they didn't have a photo ID, they would sign an affidavit and then they would go vote a regular ballot. Now, the slight shift has been if a voter is now lacking a photo ID, they cast a provisional ballot, which is different. That is then set aside and their eligibility is determined later. The question is, with greater scrutiny on each of these ballots, is there a greater opportunity to cancel ballots, to challenge someone's identity, to essentially discard a ballot that should have been counted. The other issue in Florida were some very strict rules they passed on third-party organizations, be it labor unions, a group called ACORN, other organizations that run registration drives. And what Florida's law does is it imposes some pretty severe fines on these third-party organizations if they fail to return registration forms within 10 days. Now, the fines could get as high as $5,000 per form. And what happened was a judge said, well, that's pretty steep, and that's going to stop a number of these organizations from registering people and therefore stop some people from registering to vote. So there was an injunction against the law in August. But this could definitely come back. You know, I think it'll come back to the legislature and could be revisited next year.
I'm going to ask you a question that I can't imagine you can really answer, but that's not going to stop me. The question is, like, why is this happening? Why in the United States of America are we so worried about the election being accurate? I mean, I just don't remember in my lifetime. I know there's been corruption. I know there's been, you know, contested elections in various places. But there's never been anything quite like this for several elections in a row. What is going on?
It's a great question. And I think what's going on is there's a much greater emphasis on the administration of elections than there ever has been before. My organization, for example, we didn't exist in 1999. We started up after the 2000 election because of the number of problems that were found around the country. I think both political parties have learned that they need to pay attention to the process or they're going to lose. They're going to lose an election because they didn't know what the recount procedures are. They didn't know, you know, how to challenge voters effectively. They've both been studying this issue. And as the electorate has become more divided, and now we're really a 50-50 country, every race is high stakes, and you know, there's always the possibility of using the courts to your advantage in an election. Both sides seek advantage both before, during, and after an election, and voter ID is one of those issues where, you know, we've got Republicans saying there's something wrong with fraud in our election system, and we've got Democrats saying there's something wrong with lack of access in our election system. They collide right at voter ID. You know, this is the issue that both parties have consistently have disagreed on, because it really cuts to that integrity versus access to the system.
Do you have any advice to voters this year who feel that either they're being denied access to the voting polls, or they suspect that their vote won't be accurately counted, or they've noticed some other irregularity that makes them suspicious? What should they do?
Well, I think the first thing a voter should do, and they should start soon, is to verify their registration before the election. Just call up, or if the state or locality offers it, go check on the website whether they are, in fact, properly registered. If there's a problem with registration, there's not a lot of time to fix it, but it is worth checking right now. There's a website called canivote.org that offers sort of a one-stop service where voters can link to each state or locality and find out their registration status and other information like polling place information. That's sort of the first step. At the polling place, if a voter makes a mistake, they need to tell a poll worker. They need to get a new ballot. They don't need to be embarrassed. Machines are new and the processes are new. So if you make a mistake, don't be too proud. Get a new ballot. If you have a voter verified paper audit trail, look at it. They did a study in Nevada in 2004, and only about 30% of voters, the ones that they measured, bothered to ever look at this piece of paper that's running next to the voting machine. Well, you know, this is an important piece of the process, is that you need to make sure that the piece of paper matches up with the electronic total, because there's a chance, if there's a recount, the piece of paper is the only vote that matters. So make sure that it worked correctly. And I think if Cuyahoga County voters paid closer attention, they probably would have noticed these blank spots or other problems with their voter verified paper audit trails. The next step in the process, on the wall of every polling place in the country, is a voter grievance procedure phone number and other information, where if someone has a problem that they feel they were wrongly denied the right to vote, that a machine didn't work, or some other problem, every state has had to establish a formal grievance procedure as part of the Help America Vote Act that was passed in 2002. So that's sort of the last step. And then usually in these high-stakes states and high-stakes races. If you walk outside, you'll see someone wearing a T-shirt that says election protection. If you have a problem, call this number. So there are organizations out there, nonpartisan organizations, that will help voters if they need it.
Well, Dan Seligson, thanks so much for talking with us.
Absolutely. A pleasure.
Dan Seligson is the editor of electionline.org. They've published a 2006 election preview.